Today we will continue the discussion of black hole perturbations. We will talk about the perturbation of rotating black holes. So we talked about Schwarzschild. Schwarzschild has spherical symmetry. So that means we can separate out the angular part. For curved black holes, we only have this azimuthal rotational symmetry. So that means we can only separate out the phi dependence, not the theta dependence. So if we separate out the phi dependence, then when we write down the perturbative equation for h mu mu, right? So it will be so it still depends on TR and theta. Even if we separate out the time dependence by go to frequency domain, it still depends on R and theta. So in general, the perturbative Einstein equation would be still be a partial differential equation, which is coupled partial differential equation, which is difficult to solve. To simplify this problem, Tucholsky in 1973 found that it's convenient to use the so-called Newman-Penrose formalism. Okay, so I will not go to details of the Newman-Penrose formalism. Basically, in this formalism, you define a tetrad. Basically, you have a set of basis vectors called tetrad. Usually, in curve, the common choice would be tetrad L mu. Go to okay, so the tetrad basis will be L and M and M bar. Or M star, because M is a complex vector. So you can check that these vectors, these bases are all null vectors. Okay, so they're all null. And if you product, compute the product of L of N, then they're 1, and about M star, there, minus 1. So at each space-time point, you can define this set of tetrad bases. And then you can decompose your wire tensor, because let's assume it is lacking for now. So you can decompose your well scalar, well tensor, which has 10 free components. You can decompose this wire tensor using the Tetra basis. You can basically define, because you have 10 free components, you can define 5 complex scalars. Let me call it Psi 3, Psi 4, Psi 4, 3, 2, 1. Zero. Okay. M bar is just M star. Okay. So these Newman parallel scalars will have different asymptotic behaviors at infinity. For example, this Psi 0 at infinity, sorry, this Psi 4 is at infinity is proportional to 1/r. Psi 3 is 1/r². Psi 2 is r³, and so on. This 1/r behavior is very important. It's crucial, because then it implies this Psi 4 is associated with radiation at infinity. Okay. Now, within this Newman parallels formalism, and if we plug in the wild tensor of Kerr. For Kerr, we will find that Psi 0, 1, 3, and 4 are all 0. The only non-vanishing component is Psi 2. Okay. Okay. Let me define the delta and sigma here. So it turns out that it's very convenient to use these spaces, okay, because it projects the wild tensor to different components, which has different symbolic behaviors. And it also turns out that you can manipulate the perturbative equations for these scalars. And at the end, you can arrive at a wave equation for either psi 0 or psi 4. Okay. Let me define a new quantity psi. So it is either psi 0 or psi 4. R minus IA cosine theta to the fourth. Okay. So this S is called the spin weight. This is related how this quantity change if you rotate the phi. Okay. Okay. So it turns out that you will get the decoupled equations for psi. So it's either psi 0 or psi 4. So this equation is called Tarkovsky equation. So if you want to see the derivation details of how you use Newman Perron's formalism to arrive at this equation, you should look at Tarkovsky's paper. It's FJ 1973. Okay. Because this equation is very important, so I'm gonna write on a new blackboard. So the equation is like this. If S is 2, then it's for psi 0, S is minus 2 is for psi 4. Okay, the right hand side is the source term. For vacuum, the source would be 0. Which is true for if we want to study the modes of curved black holes. So this equation looks complicated, but it already greatly simplifies the perturbation of a curved black hole. Remember, I was saying that if you want to deal with matrix perturbations, you need to solve coupled PDEs for these 10 matrix variables. But now I only need to solve the wave equation for one single variable. And if we want to go to the frequency domain of this equation, I can further simplify it. So let's consider separation of variables. So let's define apparently I omega t and I m phi separable. Then let's assume there is a separate dependence on theta and on R. Okay. So we can plug these answers into the Tarkovsky equation. And then what we find is that this equation can be written as two separate equations in R in the radial direction and in theta direction. So now it becomes two equations because the separation variable works. Here the capital K is R square A square omega minus AM. And lambda is quantity A plus A square omega square minus 2A. So the angular equation looks like 1 over sine theta Okay, so it's completely non-trivial that you will first get a wave equation for a single quantity, for a decoupled wave equation, and then this wave equation is separable. Okay, very few spacetimes will have this property, but then Tarkovsky managed to show that if you use these Newman parallel scalars, then we can have a wave equation, decoupled and separable wave equation, which simplifies a lot for the calculation. Okay. Okay. So now the problem becomes, if we want to understand curve perturbations, the problem becomes solving these two wave equations. If we want to understand the modes of curved spacetime, of course we want to find the eigenmodes of these wave equations subject to the appropriate boundary conditions. Then we can first look at the angular equation, right? So this angular equation is very similar to the eigen equation for spherical harmonics if you set A equal to zero. But now the spin, black hole spin A, is non-zero, so this new angular equation has a new eigenfunctions. So the angular Tarkovsky equation its eigenfunction is basically called spheroidal spin weighted harmonics. So it can be expanded as a summation of spherical harmonics, yeah, and the expansion will be in the black hole spin A. Okay. The radial equation is more interesting. So let's try to define a new variable u. Okay. Let's define a u b. Something like this. Okay. And we also define a new tortoise coordinate in curve, which satisfy this property. So with this new variable u, the Tarkovsky equation will become something like this. So a double derivative on r star. Here the G is S times R minus M divided by R squared plus A squared. So this form is convenient because it's easier for us to analyze the boundary conditions. For example, if we want to look at R approach infinity, basically R star will go to infinity, then the wave equation becomes something like okay. We have dropped all the subdominant terms in 1/R. Of course, then it's easy to see that you have two solutions of this differential equation corresponding to the ingoing and outgoing solution. So U is R plus minus S. Or correspondingly, this is for R, for the original R. This is either proportional I omega R star divided by R, or it is proportional I divided by R 2s plus 1. So because the time dependence is basically e to the minus I omega t, so obviously this will be the outgoing wave at infinity, and this will be the ingoing wave at infinity. Okay. So similarly, at horizon, the wave equation looks like U pi double R star plus K squared minus 2Y S R plus minus M K is small k. 2m r plus minus as well. Okay. Here, this quantity k is omega minus m omega plus. Well, this omega plus is a horizon frequency, which is a divided by 2m r plus. Okay, so we also have a simplified equation near the horizon, then we can also get two asymptotic solutions. U is basically E plus minus I So basically, this implies that R will either scale as e to the I k R star or delta minus 1 s e to the minus I k R star. So this is outgoing wave, and this is the ingoing wave. So similar to the Schwarzschild case, right? So at the horizon, right, you only expect waves to go into the horizon. No wave will come out of the horizon. So you usually you just eliminate this piece. Okay. So you can compute the group velocity of the ingoing piece of the wave horizon. So the group velocity so in this TR star diagram would be something like minus dk d omega. So this is minus 1. So the group velocity will travel at the speed of light going into the horizon. But the phase velocity of this ingoing wave is minus 1 plus m omega plus divided by omega. So this phase velocity, apparently, it is less than zero. It's still ingoing if omega is larger than m omega plus, and be greater than zero if omega is less than m omega plus. So it turns out that the energy flux at the horizon is proportional to the phase velocity. So energy flux as seen by observer at infinity is proportional to V phase. So if m omega plus is greater than omega, that means the energy flux will be positive if this condition is satisfied, meaning that we will extract energy from the black hole instead of dissipating energy to the black hole. So this phenomenon is usually called the super radiance. So when the rotation speed of the black hole is large, but basically if this condition is satisfied, then we can extract the rotation energy of the black hole. Okay. Okay, so now we understand the boundary condition. We have the wave equation. In principle, we can try to solve this wave equation, So for arbitrary L and M, the way to solve it is you have to use numerical methods. For example, using the Leavers method we mentioned last time. But if you want to get intuitive understandings of the waves or the eigenmodes of curved spacetime, you can use analytical approximations. For example, you can still go to the WKB limit. It turns out the WKB limit gives a decent approximation for the true quasi-null modes. Okay, so let's look at the WKB limit of these Tarkovsky equations and try to solve the equation in this limit. So in the limit, we still write U is as a separable functions. But then we only keep terms which are leading order in L. So what are the terms that's leading order in L? For example, if you look at the angular equations, we insist that omega is proportional to L, M is proportional to L. Okay. But S is just 2, for example. And this term will be subdominant because these two terms is proportional to L squared, this term is proportional to L, so you can drop this term. Same with this term, same with this term, same with this term. But the angular eigenvalue term is also proportional to L squared, so you have to keep them. So the angular equation then simplifies in this WKB limit. So if you look at this equation, we can further write this as if we define d dx equal to sine theta d theta, and this whole thing multiplies sine square theta. We define as V theta. So this equation will look like something like du theta dx squared plus V theta. Okay, very standard wave equation. And if you want to plot this potential term, so this is u equal x equal to minus infinity correspond to theta equals 0 plus infinity theta equal to pi. So when theta is either 0 or pi, then this potential is basically minus m squared. So this is something like, okay, it's not very symmetric, but it looks something like this. Okay. So basically, in this region, is x minus theta minus x plus or theta plus. In this region, the wave number is positive, right? So because this term is positive, so they're propagating waves. So you basically have, you can have waves propagating in these two directions in this WKB picture. Well, in this region, there the waves have to exponentially decay. So if you further impose that at theta equals 0, the u theta has to be 0. And same thing here. So you impose that the wave equation has to be satisfy this kind of boundary condition. Then you basically can solve for the eigenwaves in whole domain. OK, I will not list the. So you basically use the method I just described. And then you will arrive at the condition for eigen solutions. So it turns out that it's very similar to the Bohm-Sommerfeld quantization condition we learned in quantum mechanics. So the eigen solution will satisfy d theta divided by sine theta square root of v theta equal to capital L minus m times pi. Okay. Well, this capital L is basically small l plus 1/2. So this is basically the solution for the angular Tarkovsky equation. The radial Tarkovsky equation in this WKB limit. Also be simplified. So there, only the kinetic term and the potential term. Okay, so basically this capital A is the eigenvalue in this angular Tarkovsky equation. And this eigenvalue will be fixed by this Bohm-Sommerfeld quantization condition. And then you can plug in the eigenvalue in this radial Tarkovsky equation and try to solve for the radial Tarkovsky equation. So in a TR star diagram, it's very similar to Schwarzschild case. You have a potential, and then you have an ingoing boundary condition at the horizon. And if you want to solve for the eigenmode, then you will need to impose the outgoing boundary condition at infinity. But in the WKB picture, everything simplifies. In the WKV picture, these potential term components are very big. Remember, I was saying that omega will be proportional to L, and M is proportional to L, A is proportional to L squared. So they are very big. So the potential term, the whole thing, is proportional to L squared, which means that if you want ingoing wave here and outgoing wave here, basically you will need to have this whole component, the whole wave number component, to be zero at the peak. A similar argument as Schwarz showed. So if it's larger than zero at this peak position, then basically you should just have one wave traveling at one particular direction. It's either ingoing or outgoing. It cannot split. Okay, the only way to have the wave split is that the wave number has to be zero at the peak. Okay, so the condition that the wave number has to be zero at the peak is basically so the peak is partial VR, partial R. At the peak position, let me call it RP. So at the peak position, V has to be zero. Okay, basically using these two equations, and you plug in the expression for the potential, and then you can get the real part of the quasi-normal frequency. Also, in last time, we mentioned that, at least in the Schwarzschild case, if we use this WKB method to solve for the wave frequency, we find that the wave frequency is related to the light ring frequency. So here, give an argument why that's true. Okay, so the argument applies for Kerr as well. Okay, so let's basically look at the geometric correspondence, geometric picture of these modes. Okay. So in the WKB limit, basically we have U being an amplitude function times a phase function. This phase function S, very much faster than the amplitude function. Okay. So if we consider, let's say, a wave equation for scalar field, because in the WKB limit, the scalar field will satisfy the same Tikhonov equation as tensor field. If we plug in this expression into the wave equation, and we keep only leading order terms, we will basically get g mu mu partial mu s partial nu s equals zero. This is nothing but the Hamilton-Jacobi equation for test particle. In a Kerr space time, okay? because it's cheaper. So I'm sure you have learned how a task particle will move on curved spacetime. And basically, by solving the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, you will find that, for example, this principal function S can be written as some part dependent only on theta, and then LZ times phi plus part dependent on R minus ET. Okay, this is the solution for the Hamilton-Jacobi equation for a test particle in curve. Okay, while this S R is some so you can find all these expressions, for example, in MTW. So here, the D is the Carter's constant. Okay. So what we just have shown is that in the WKB limit, basically you can rewrite, you can show that the Tarkovsky equation is related to the Hamilton-Jacobi equation for a test particle. And then you have this solution for the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. Then you can plug this solution to the leading order. Right. So U is basically A times IS, but in the leading order, I just dropped the amplitude. So this is minus IET, E to the ILZ phi, E to the plus minus IS theta, and E to the plus minus ISR. And I want to compare the solution of the Hamilton-Jacobi equation to the solution of the Tarkovsky equation. Okay. So did I write? Okay. So let me. So the Tarkovsky equation, U R U theta, E to the I, M phi. E to the minus I omega t. Okay. So these two are the same quantity. And then by comparing these two, you can immediately see that the omega, at least the real part, corresponds to the energy of a null test particle. Okay. And M correspond to the LZ of the test particle. And if you compare the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, the theta part of that, you compare this to the V theta. So you basically compare with V theta, and then you will find that this Carter's constant will can be related to so A is Carter's constant plus A minus m squared is basically the Carter constant. Okay, so basically these equations have one-to-one correspondence. They are the same thing. And in particular, if we want to compute omega r, the real part of quasi-null mode frequency, we just need to imagine that. So we have just showed that this tensor particle orbit corresponds to the mode. Okay. So we just have to use the fact that the phase is invariant for this tensor particle or the null rays. So if we imagine this null ray on these spherical orbits traveling from theta minus to theta plus, okay. The phase, the total phase S is invariant. So delta S is 0. And from theta minus to theta plus, the time takes, let me call it t theta. So this is minus half t theta, because the total period is t theta. So omega r t theta divided by 2. All right, this is the IET term. Then you have this s theta from theta plus, from theta minus to theta plus. Right, this is this term, contributed to the phase. And then you have the m phi term. So during this time, the phi has increased for this amount. Okay. I have divided by 2 because this is like half of the period in theta. So delta phi is the angle for the whole period. Okay, so there is no r part because I'm talking about the spherical orbits, as we have shown that the quasi-null mode is associated with particles only staying at the peak position, so they're not moving in r direction, so there's no r components. So this is omega r, the period in theta direction divided by 2. But then this piece, using the Bohm Sommerfeld condition, this piece is L minus m minus pi plus okay. And then by solving this equation, you will get omega r is a function of omega theta plus m omega, let me call precession frequency. Well, this omega theta is just 2 pi divided by t theta, and precession frequency is basically delta phi minus 2 pi sine of m divided by t theta. Okay, so basically the omega theta is the frequency of the theta motion on the omega precess is the precession frequency of these spherical orbits. So, and we have just shown that the quasi-normal frequency in the WKB limit can be expressed as a linear summation of these two frequencies. So that's another evidence that the quasi-normal mode in the WKB limit is just equal to the null rays on the spherical orbits. Okay. Okay, so I think we discussed the real part. Similarly, you can work out the WKB limit for the imaginary part of the frequencies. It turns out this WKB approximation works very well, even if the L is small. Let's say L equals 2, it works very well. But if you want to get the most accurate answer, of course, you have to use the Lever's method to solve the wave equations. Okay, so I guess we have completed the discussion of the Kerr perturbations and the quasi-normal mode. And next time tomorrow, we will discuss a bit about the detector physics. Okay.